And welcome to Art Speak Radio. I'm your host, Maria Vasquez-Boyd, and I've got the beautiful and talented Michelle Pond here in the studio with me. Hello, Michelle.
Hello, Maria.
We've got a great program lined up for you tonight. Tell us who our guest is for the evening.
Our guest for this first hour is Nicole Emanuel. Nicole is a painter, sculptor, writer, and placemaker. She received a B.A. in Design and Industry summa cum laude with a minor in Community Arts from San Francisco State University and began her career in public art and creative placemaking construction. She has created 20 large-scale murals and 2 large-scale public sculptures. Her paintings and drawings are in numerous corporate and private collections in New York, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Kansas, and Missouri. She received a BFA in painting from the Kansas City Art Institute and was valedictorian. In 2011, she developed Inner Urban Art House, her current obsession. Welcome, Nicole.
Hi.
Thanks for being with us tonight.
Thanks.
And Nicole serves as executive director of Inner Urban Art House. And what prompted you to start this organization?
Well, the immediate prompt was working in my basement. I had 70 small sculptures and 7 large paintings. And I thought, where are my people? I'm alone in the basement in the suburbs, and I'm an urban girl. So I started looking around for a studio space and saw an empty industrial building and thought, oh, I'm back to doing this. This has got to be about more people than me. There's got to be other people, and apparently there's hundreds, if not more, in our area that need studio space and connectivity.
And where did the name come from?
Well, Inner Urban was the name of the small suburban, was a train, the first electric self-propelled train that connected the outlying areas to the urban core. And it was begun by William Strang, and he bought a great amount of land out there and created an aviation pavilion. So it was the advent of this new technology, and 20 to 30,000 people would come on the weekends to see these air shows and to see planes that were for the first time they would see them. And he would say, by the way, great place to raise your kids. And so the idea for Inner Urban Art House came to me when I saw the mapping of the arts organizations and arts activity in the region, and I saw that the layout of the swath of arts venues and programs and nonprofits ran the same route that the Inner Urban used to. And so the train is gone, but the cultural commute is stronger than ever, and so we want to be a station on that train line. So
tell us a little more about the organization's mission.
Oh, you're going to make me remember this by heart. Nick is rolling his eyes now. So Nick Carswell is my executive director, and he's not here, but he will telepathically give me my mission. Essentially, it's to create a place where artists and creative entrepreneurs can affordably and sustainably create a business atmosphere where they can share and grow, prosper, and develop in the community. So being a nonprofit organization, our priority is to own a property to maintain the affordability, and we want to be accessible and inclusive.
And you've worked hard on reaching out to develop partnerships with the other arts organizations throughout the metro.
Yeah, I mean, the concept is that we're not reinventing or competing with what's already out there. Partnerships, I think, are the most important way to go. I think competition and division is very energy wasting. So I feel as though if someone's doing something beautifully and it's just not in my area, let me host them. So Inner Urban Art House hosts Artists Inc., which is the preeminent entrepreneurial program for artists, and we've done things with Johnson County Community College, the Kansas City Volunteer Lawyers and Accountants for the Arts, UMKC, Emporia State. So that's just to name a few.
And you have several programming streams up and running already. One, Art Smart, you started started even before you started in Urban Art House.
Yeah, so
didn't
I
you?
Right. So
Can you
I
tell
have
us a little about that one.
Yeah, the reason why I left the Urban Core was we had decided that we wanted to stick with the public school system, and decided to move to Kansas side, and so I was asked by the PTA of a public school to run their Art Smart program, and that, as most things that I do, grows into an enormous monster of creative endeavor. And they told me I could do whatever I wanted, so that was dangerous.
That was the first mistake.
Totally dangerous thing to say. So what began with a small, I don't know, I think we had $2,000 for the entire year, and I think I had 54 classroom programs that first year and some assemblies, and it's grown. Now we get a Green Schools grant from the Department of Environment and Health for solid waste management, and so that pays $4,500 to bring artists in to the school to teach art and environmental stewardship. So it occurred to me that need fit really beautifully with Inner Urban Art House, and I asked last year if that could be, instead of me being the chair, if Inner Urban Art House could be the provider of that programming. And now we're doing it in Comanche, which is a very deserving school with 80% of their kids under the poverty line.
Can you talk a little bit just about maybe some of the specific programs that you, individual programs,
sure,
that you've offered?
So we're really lucky. We have Manuel Lucky Harvey is doing hip-hop dance classes at Briarwood Elementary, and Jose Foss is doing written literary arts. Amado Espinosa and Karen Lissandra are doing world music. Nedra Bonds has done recycled materials to make dolls. Who else do we have? Anthony Amigo Man Oropesa is a bilingual literary advocate, and he does comic books and speaks as an artist and a literary. And the Stone Lion Puppet Theater has been with us from the beginning, providing fully funded assemblies. So, in a Comanche, we have David Cross, who is a conservatory student, UMKC, and he's teaching. We've expanded the hip-hop class. It's an after-school program, and they have to go through background checks and the whole gig to get in to work at Comanche. It's pretty rigorous for him to get
process.
Into.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I'm sure I'm not. Oh, so we also use Kaufman Open Doors program. We bring the kids out to Kaufman to see performing arts. Fully half the kids I asked, had you ever seen a live performance, and half of them had never. So we feel really blessed to be able to bring that. So we serve between 500 and 1,000 kids a year, but multiple times a year in different ways with different artists. And we pay the artists a fair wage, which is critically important. I'm an artist. I'd like to get paid.
Yeah. Well, that certainly is that's a much broader and a more diverse program than I realized.
Well, and today we were talking to the Jewish Community Center, and they would like to expand some of our Art Smart programming to the community center there. So we'd be happy to
do that. So it continues to grow.
Well, and the part of the funding, this was fascinating, from the Green Schools grant, it began with composting everything in the lunchroom, teaching the kids how to separate all the garbage in the lunchroom, and using the art programming to reinforce the concept of recycling and sustainability. And so they went from, can't remember how many dumpsters of garbage to practically nil, and all the composting, and it's wonderful. And the kids are, I think, transformed by it.
And that's so great that, you know, the arts can be used to help reinforce some practical experiences and just almost kind of a lifestyle type of a decision for the kids to know that, okay, now this is a good thing to do.
It's also an antidote to the powerlessness that I think the media creates. When you listen to the world news, we have more news than we know what to do with, and kids aren't really empowered to begin with. So if they feel like they're doing something super concrete in their daily lives, and we teach them that that's how you create peace and justice and environmentalism, is you do what's in your purview. And they really get that, and they're very proud. And they get to take home cool art projects.
That's the best, that they create.
Yeah, or those, you know, gigantic puppets that float on Brush Creek or something. Yeah, they did. That's pretty cool.
How about a little bit about the ArtWorks program?
So ArtWorks, we did a survey when this idea first came up before we were a 501c3. Artists told us they wanted six things, and the sixth thing, or one of out of no particular order, was a place. So that's the longest running, most difficult piece of it. Art Smart is the educational piece. Artists want to see more arts education. And ArtWorks is entrepreneurial program. They want to know how to negotiate contracts, how to protect themselves legally, what is the legal formation of their business, how to keep their books, how to market. So anything a small business would need, artists need, and there's always a little bit of a twist to it because it's so creative and internal and personal, but also varied. It's not a product. It's a way of life as well as whatever the person is making. So that the ArtWorks program, so we work with the volunteer lawyers and accountants for the arts and the Artist Inc. program and the Small Business Center out of Johnson County Community College. We, as InterUrban, we're artists. The staff people are artists. We don't pretend to think that we're the ones to do it. We bring in the best that we can find. It gives them a whole new constituency, a place to land in an area where there's people that aren't getting the programming they need.
Well, and I have some personal experience with having attended a web and social media workshop that you did, well, it's over a year ago now. And then...
The Kickstarter?
No, the website and social media...
Okay.
Workshop.
Okay, yeah.
That was held at the Johnson County Library.
Oh, yeah.
And then you all formed a spinoff group.
Right.
And we've been meeting for a little over a year now, I think.
Yeah.
Or just coming up maybe on a year.
So what that is Nick Carswell, he's a performing musician. He's our executive director. He just got a promotion. He's our assistant director. And he runs the marketing and web co-op, and that's every...
First Tuesday.
Thank you. of the month, and it's you can come at any time. It's sort of open door kind of a thing, and they review how to use Facebook and do your website and how to use analytics and basically your Twitter, and it really shows you the pitfalls and the tricks and the ways to do it. So it's in demand for people to know how to be savvy about all that. So,
and it's very much a give and take, in that it's not like Nick just sitting there kind of teaching.
No.
People come and bring they bring things that they've done. Like if someone starts a Facebook page, they'll come and say, well, I finally got my Facebook page started. And so we'll take a look at that and
There's
talk
a projector
about it a little bit. Yeah.
Right, so there's a projector and a computer, and we look at things live.
And then they'll ask for... ask questions.
Right.
So why don't you give us your website?
Oh, so we're at interurbanarthouse.org. Interurbanarthouse.org.
We're going to take a short break, but don't go far because we'll be right back.
90.1 FM, supported by Just Off Broadway Theater, presenting A Gathering of Traditions on December 5th and 6th. This is a holiday potluck celebration of diverse traditions and cultures from our community, hosted by Bill Claus, featuring storytelling, stage presentations, and performances by Amando Espinoza, Philip Bu Al Hooser, KC International Music Ensemble, and many more. All proceeds donated to Redemptorist Social Services Center. That's December 5th and 6th, just off Broadway.org for more information.
In September of 2014, Women Rising Radio rode the People's Climate Train coast to coast with over 200 activists heading to New York for the largest climate march in history. Hear the sounds of that spirited train ride on Making Contact, Thursday at 12:30 p.m.
And we're back with Art Speak Radio. I'm Michelle Pond with Maria Vasquez Boyd.
Hello, Michelle.
Hello, Maria. And our guest tonight is Nicole Emanuel, the Executive Director of Interurban Art House. And we were talking about some of the different programming streams that you have. How about Art Matters?
Art Matters is the promotion of studio excellence among artists. We've had Sean Kelly come out and do critique night. We have a regular sketch night, so tonight is sketch night. I'm not there. We have a nude model, and you sign up for that. There's a different model. I think there's burlesque costuming tonight, so I guess nudity is maybe a little broadened under that. And so you bring your own supplies, and you work for several hours on your own, and there are time poses, and you're told ahead of time. What else do we do with Art Matters? We've had art classes. We've had a plein air class. We have an abstract painting class this weekend with Jilly Nell. And we had dance performance related events. So we try to cross the whole spectrum of art forms. We are not just visual artists. We also do literary photography, performance, and try and focus on those things, and art therapy, try and focus on them in all our programming. Each time it's a little different.
And you have actually groups, Writers Roundtable and the new photography group.
Right.
That falls under that.
Right, and those are also. Those are open doors also. So if anybody's interested, if there's a photographer or somebody interested in digital imagery or in literary arts, we're by all means welcome you. It's a very open situation.
Yes, it is. And the Arts Connect program, which is community and public art networking and outreach, you actually started, your career started in public art. Didn't it?
Yeah, accidentally. I was visiting in San Francisco and just volunteered to paint in a building. It was the women's building. And it turned out it was a public mural. It was publicly funded. And Patricia Rodriguez was the contracted artist. And she gave me a paintbrush and said, here, you do this person. And it was women of color who were unrecognized in history, who had achieved unusual things, and so it was an exterior mural, and then we went on to do Balmy Alley, which was a 28 murals painted by 50 artists on every surface in an alley on a whole city block. It still exists, and it was all about peace in Central America. It was in the Mission District, which is the Latino section, and Patricia lived on that street. And so from there, I went on to do other public art projects, always neighborhood involved, always a tremendous amount of cultural and historical representation, and always fair to the demographics. So
why did you choose to work in that area?
In San Francisco? Or
no, in public art.
I think it changed my concept of my being a free-floating agent on the planet. It made a connection for me. I understood where I fit in politics and my community. It put me in a place in history. It put me in a place in the art world, and I felt useful and connected. I don't know how else to put it. And that led directly into my working in developing space. All my friends were living illegally throughout the city in warehouses. At the time, it wasn't legal to live in an industrial area, but the city perceived several of the projects where people were squatting and living illegally, I mean code-wise, as treasures. So Project Arto, and actually Peregrine Honig was a child in the building at the time that I was working there legalizing it, bringing it up to code, going in and retrofitting, making sure, you know, balconies and floors and fire systems and, you know, all that code compliance stuff. So that put me in a place where I began to believe that creating a place that was affordable for artists was at the foundation of artists making their work. And by helping that, I was helping hundreds of people. And went on to Minneapolis, where I worked at a nonprofit called Art Space Projects, which there was like three of us in the office, has now grown to be the nation's largest nonprofit arts developer. And we did nonprofit low-income housing for artists and their families, and used renovated historic warehouses as the base. So that's what, when I look at an empty building, I see what it could be used for the arts.
Well, and Nicole, I just want to ask you, were you propelled then into social sort of activism through your arts, or did one feed off the other? I mean, you saw a need and you saw sort of what you could do or what you would be willing to do. Was that a conscious effort, or it just sort of fell into your lap?
Well,
as a social activist?
The context is, well, my mom is a child of the Holocaust, and I found that very frightening and disempowering, in the sense that in a way I didn't know what to do with how to function in the world with that kind of thought. But when I was in a neighborhood with a paintbrush in hand, and we were working with people that were, you know, had just come up from El Salvador, or kids that were in the neighborhood, and they would ask me what I was painting, and I would explain I was painting the history of Nicaragua on this particular mural, and the political activism was so concrete. It was so right there. It was so every day. It was surrounding the people I was working with. And I felt useful in the sense that my artwork, I mean, when they invented public art, not, excuse me, let me rephrase that. When public art was supported by the government in Mexico after the revolution, there was so much illiteracy that the only way to show history was to do it illustratively in public murals. So they showed the history of the people that had been oppressed for so long and unshared. This is, you know, this is your history. And so that was, you know, the context. So then when I started housing, yes, it was, in my mind, it's my politics, it's my religion. But to me, it's a super concrete, everyday way to make change. And, you know, I
just have to interject one more thing. Given that, and I know you're a working mother, do your children share that same sort of passion and willingness to sort of thrust themselves into, you know, making a difference and in the political and seeing what you can do with art? Or just being in that arena altogether, just serving, you know, helping people.
Yeah, and I think if you show kids through your own life how it folds into your everyday world. So, like my daughter, for example, raised money for the Heifer Foundation by reading books over the summer with a bunch of girlfriends. She got a book group together and got money, you know, asked people to pay for how many pages or books they read, and then donated it because they wanted to buy chickens and cows and bees and trees and stuff for folks in third world countries.
So they share your attitude with that sort of activism. You know, and with everything that you do with the Interurban Art House and your own work and all the programs that you have going on, is it difficult to find time for Nicole, for yourself as an artist?
Someone had to beat me over a club over the head with a club recently, and I took a vacation last week. I think it was the first time I was alone in 7 years. Utah, hiking.
Was that Moab?
No, it was familiar. It was outside of St. George, so it's Snow Canyon. And but there were petroglyphs, and of course I couldn't get far away from my chatterbox self. But, you know, I do want to say, so you brought up a subject that's very important to me, and that is the challenges of being a parent and being an entrepreneur and being in the arts and being a woman on top of that. You know, I think is that to do a good job in all those worlds is an important challenge that requires a support network of other people that validate what you're doing. One of the things that I really hope to see in my work here is the coming together over the state line and across the counties.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate because it reminds me of art school. It was like, okay, there's the illustration department.
Yeah.
And there's the painting department. And, you know, the illustration were sellouts, and the painting department, they were just, you know, pot smokers, and they didn't care about, you know, the art. It was just...
Right, stereotypes are even in the most progressive communities.
So I kind of felt that sensibility, in a way, with the state line.
Absolutely. Well, you know. And people's, you know, when we moved to Johnson County, I felt as though I was written off in the urban core. There was a blog about inner urban at one point, and somebody said, oh, I bet she'd run away if she saw a person of color. And I'm like, okay, give me your phone number, or come and visit me, or read my resume, or whatever.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know, that presumption is so, it's so sad to me. I really hope that, you know, people begin to, well, and Johnson County is changing, and hugely.
Demographics,
the
yes.
demographics are...
Much different than when
yes,
I was growing
so
up.
Yes, so the communities of color, the socioeconomic, the poverty level, it's changing. There is a stereotype about Johnson County that's very, I think, eviscerating. And in the arts, it's really not true. And in the community arts, it's not true at all.
I would agree. Yeah,
thank
absolutely.
You.
Well, and it struck me when you were talking about your work in San Francisco and the importance of connectivity and how worthwhile you felt that really then had a strong influence on you when you found yourself alone in your basement and decided
True.
To start. That had a strong influence in you starting in an urban art house.
Yeah, I guess because I lived with people that were sort of radical in a lot of ways, it taught me that if you are experiencing something, you are a part of a group. Maybe you don't sense the group around you, but if you're aware of it and you have any skills and you're beholden, I feel responsible in the best of ways, and that makes me feel worthy to be able to use my skills for good. So that's important.
Well, it's great to be able to recognize that, because so many people, when they're in a situation like that, do feel like they're alone. And so to be able to recognize that if you feel that way, other people probably feel that way.
Yes.
And then you went out and started to find those people and started to put together opportunities
right.
to help all of you.
It helps.
Bring all
it
of
helps.
You together.
That, yeah, and it helps that I'm extroverted. If I were introverted
oh, really?
In that situation, oh really? I know. I would hug everybody if we could all just fit in here. Right. So we have a map of. Oh, so let me tell you something about inner urban. So we started in my house. And I say we, like there was a whole bunch of me. And then it's a long story, but through partnerships and a number of efforts, we were successful in getting an NEA grant. And I immediately hired Nick Carswell, and we got a one-room storefront. And then the following year, last December, so it's not quite a year, moved into a 5,000-square-foot space. We have 8 studios with 10 artists. And I totally forget what I'm talking about. Was that one sentence? I lost my train of thought.
Honey, it happens to the best of us. You've got so much going on, so, you know, I can certainly understand that. But give us again the website for our listeners. We're going to go to break in just a little bit, but go ahead and give us the website that listeners can look at.
It's interurbanarthouse.org.
Okay, with that, we're going to take a real quick break for underwriting and just a little bit of music. So please stay with us.
While we were driving, we were supposed to be looking out to see if there was any hostile enemy wanting to do us harm. But instead, all I could see were women and children running away from all the gunfire that was going off. So I didn't fire a single shot while I was in Iraq.
Thomas Young just died. In his honor, an encore broadcast of Tom Clammer's interview with him on Sprouts, Thursday at noon.
As Governor Nixon places Missouri National Guard on emergency alert, organizers in many cities are prepared to respond to the grand jury decision for the shooting death of Mike Brown by a police officer. This week on the Heartland Labor Forum, we will discuss issues raised by the August shooting in Ferguson, Missouri. That's Heartland Labor Forum, Thursday, 6 p.m., rebroadcast Friday, 5 a.m. This is Art Speak Radio. I'm Michelle Pond with Maria Vasquez Boyd.
Hello. Happy Wednesday.
And our guest tonight is Nicole Emanuel, the Executive Director of Interurban Art House. And we were talking about your Arts Connect program.
Right.
Which community and public art networking and outreach. And you actually had a networking event today.
Oh, right. So we had a really cool experience. So it varies a little bit, but 10 o'clock in the morning, once a month, we have morning brew. We serve goodies and coffee and sit around and talk about ourselves. So we sit in a big circle, and everybody talks about. So we had show and tell today. There's been different themes. We had an art therapy theme. We had a performing arts theme one time. So at the show and tell, so everybody goes around. They tell what they're doing, showed a piece of work, talked about it, and people, you know, cross-talk across the group. And at one point, and I was really pleased to see that the neighborhood organizer from the city was there. And she spoke very city-like for a little while, and then somebody interrupted and said, oh, what was her name from the founder of the Writer's Place?
Sharon Eicher.
Said, oh, if anybody knows somebody who needs a used saxophone, let us know. And so Roz from the city started to cry and said that her partner was going back to school to pursue his saxophone music work, and they couldn't afford a saxophone. And she started to cry. And we all were like, welcome to Interurban Art House, because a lot of times what happens is there's a kind of serendipity. It's like we have a universe blessing. There's a lot of, because so many people from so many different areas are coming together and helping one another, we have so many resources that we need and we have that once you start talking about it, you know, that connection's made.
What kind of resources do you have, just for instance?
Well, for example, somebody hears about a grant and somebody says, I would love to help you with that. Or somebody says, I'm looking for a teacher. This just happened. I'm looking for a teacher to, an artist, to create some centerpieces for a table and to do an art class. Or we're doing a community event and we want someone to paint publicly. So we have opportunities and share them with one another. It's a very non-competitive atmosphere.
So it's a collaboration of sorts. You know, I have what you need. You need this? Or, I mean, so that's very, I mean, that benefits a lot of people in, you know, in the community and within the arts group and all.
Yeah, and people who don't like that, you know, don't come back. But I want to talk about local life for a second. So there's the downtown Overland Park area is historical, and the one little main street, Santa Fe, where the farmers market and the clock tower are, that's been there for a very long time, and the merchants have seen some hard times, just like all main streets. And in Kansas, we did have a main street program, and that was defunded, but the community decided to continue to pursue it. And one of the things that we do as a group, it's not just merchants, obviously, nonprofits also, is to get together, and every third Friday we do from 5 to 8 various things that invite in the public. And so this group, Local Life, and also the Downtown Overland Park Partnership, well, we recently in September partnered with Johnson County Community College and Inner Urban Art House produced an event called Hip Hop Catwalk Aerial Plié. So we put Follet, Thieves of Flight, the aerialists, in the general store, which is a small shop, and they hung from the ceiling, performed all night. We got a stage, and we had hip hop, poppers, rappers, a fashion show, kids, adults. It was an amazing event. Lucky Manuel, Lucky Harvey produced it. Our DJ was Leo Gaiden, Leonidas. And I think that the fact that we had a resource, we were given a grant opportunity from Johnson County Community College. They wanted to expand their audience. They came to us to say, how do you reach new audiences? And I said, you do it in the street. Well, which is going to always be my answer. Like John Lennon. I'm kidding. So that's not always my answer. But that resource got passed from Johnson County Community College to us, and then we hired the artists and paid the artists. There was a ballet that night at the Kansas City School of Classical Ballet. They used some of their resources to fly some folks in, and they have kids on scholarship mostly. They do a wonderful job. If you don't know Kansas City School of Classical Ballet on 80th Street in Overland Park, amazing, amazing people. And we worked with, we just pass it on, and I feel like that's sort of the general sensibility around us.
And I think at the Morning Brew, too, what started to happen is that people heard about it. They knew, for example, you know, they know artists will be there. So if they have some kind of an event that they want to have some artists, then they'll come to it. And so you start getting that, you know, opportunities are announced, and then other people, you know, meet. Everybody stays after. You can see people making beelines to each other.
Exactly.
After, you know, when it's sort of...
Yeah, everybody brings their business
recess,
card.
Everybody starts making beelines for, you know, what they heard.
Right, you can
know,
see who has
a
crush on
half.
Who.
Yeah.
Professionally speaking.
And I'd like to talk about the Art Heals program, and how art can be used in therapy. And you have some personal experience with that,
with needing therapy.
Also, no, besides that,
what's my personal experience?
Working
memory loss
with the murder of your nephew.
Oh, okay. Wow, that was clever of you. Segue.
Well, I'm trying. So, it almost worked.
All right, so. It almost worked, except for I skipped the boat. Okay, so what Michelle is referring to and had to show me on a piece of paper. In 2009, I was working on a book and going to school at UMKC and raising little kids. And our nephew, Brandon Scanlon, who was a street artist and graffiti artist in Chicago, he was murdered. And his sister was staying at our house at the time. And the shock of the murder was, it was another young person, some sort of disenfranchised, ignorant white kid that didn't have anything better to do but get angry, stabbed him in the heart. And his friends were all street artists and muralists and graffiti artists and, you know, pretty young, in their 20s. Very angry, of course. And I'm friends with Gear and a bunch of folks here that Hector Casanova and I'm going to draw a blank on all the folks that work. So what we did was we created an event called Sorry for the Miscommunication. And the concept was, you know, we always miscommunicate, but we have to reach across boundaries. So street artists to gallery artists and people that only go to museums to go to see contemporary innovation, for people of color to that are not seen in the crossroads, frequently being seen in the crossroads. Anyway, so the show was a mural, and we took over Third Eye Gallery and the Mid-America parking lot and Leedy Volkus, and I had 30 graffiti artists from Chicago sleeping at my house. Best weekend ever. And and then all the artists, and we had in Kansas City, we collaborated on this gigantic mural, and then had a night of fire performers and aerialists and, you know, the art shows and everything like that. And the whole concept was the antidote to hate and grief is creativity and community. And so to me, that was the only thing I had to offer the family. I don't want to start crying. When someone's killed, there's nothing you can do, and the only thing I could do was do what I do. So, yeah, that was art therapy, and the whole family came, and it was amazing, and I have some hilarious photographs.
So tell us about the programs now that the Art Heals programs that are running at Interurban Art House.
Okay, so Sherry Jacobs is one of our studio artists. She has Heartland Art Therapy, and she is a certified art therapist. She was the president of the Art Therapy Association for the state of Kansas, a real advocate of being certified and being careful with what you're doing in art therapy. You shouldn't just call anything art therapy. It should be done by somebody. You're dealing with sensitive populations, sensitive information. So now we have some public programming. I think we have some stuff coming up this weekend. Check out our website and look at the Art Heals programming. But we also have a closed group for the girls in shelter from House of Hope coming in and doing art therapy with our intern. And our intern is now funded by the state, the Kansas Arts Foundation, which is huge for us. So we have a funded master's student getting her on-the-ground experience in her degree program, supervised by a certified art therapist, and we are so excited. And she is programming the hell out of it. I mean, there's so much I can't even describe, and we're so proud of her. And her blog on our website's gotten the most hits of any of our blogs. It's moving. When we work with Johnson County Developmental Supports, adults with disabilities came down to our studios, and they sell their work at our place, by the way. If you want to, we have this little retail thing, see their work. We hope to house them, their emerging arts program, to be housed with us when we get our permanent place where we'll own it and it'll be accessible, because we're in a rental place right now.
And you're also working on a book that came out of another tragic situation.
Yeah, so murder seems to be a motivator. And I think we talked about that once.
Well, you know, I know that it's listed on your website, and I know that you've been on the program a couple of years ago when you were with UMKC doing a project with them, her art.
Yeah, and her art.
Yeah,
correct.
Yeah. So we're just now kind of catching up, what, maybe 4 years later, and you've done a lot.
Yeah.
You've done a lot.
Yeah.
How do you do it all?
I cry and cry.
Oh, well, no. Yeah.
How do I do it all?
Yeah.
It's love. It's passion. Yeah. It's what I want to do. I heard such a cool TED Talk the other day, and it was, when you stretch yourself with failure or success, the most important thing to do is always go back to the home of your work, to the root of your work, to the thing that sustains you.
Yeah.
And so I do tend to, I'm an extreme person, and so I do tend to overdo pretty much everything.
You're an overachiever. Go ahead, say it.
Yeah, overachiever. So anonymous.
Yeah, but you know what? I think the community is, you know, benefits from your overachievedness.
Thank you.
is a word, I should know better.
Thank you.
Listen, we're going to take a real quick break, and we're going to do some underwriting and some music, and then we'll be right back with ArtSpeak Radio.
The Thomas Jefferson Hour. Tomorrow morning at 5.
Hello, this is Martha Lally, producer of KKFI's Anything Goes show with Charles Ferrugia and Carol Jean Barta. Carol, there have been some changes this year at the Kansas City Museum, but as much as things change, I guess they stay the same, don't they?
That's right, Martha. Our guest will be the new director of the museum, Anna Marie Tutera. And we'll be talking about upcoming holiday events at the museum. That's on the Anything Goes show, Friday at noon.
To ArtSpeak Radio. I'm Maria Vasquez Boyd, along with the wonderful and divine Michelle Pun.
Thank you, Maria. And we're here with Nicole Emanuel, the Executive Director of Inner Urban Art House. And you're doing so many things in the present, but I'm going to toss you into the future. What are some of the long-range plans for the organization?
So the big vision is we want to, our nonprofit wants to own a space that can secure affordability and sustainability and inclusion and more. We want to buy the post office in downtown Overland Park, and we want to build a facility that houses studios. And obviously, the post office is going to stay with us as our tenant. So we are launching a capital campaign, and so that is a huge undertaking. We are phasing it. So the first phase is about to start, and we are actually going to be participating in Giving Tuesday. We're going to be doing a funky Indiegogo all-day event. We're going to be doing some surveillance of our programming. So if you want to come down to Interurban, we'll have coffee and cider and some nibbles and some programs. And doing our Indiegogo, we're going to go to the hip-hop class. We're going to do the Artist-Writers Roundtable and the Web and Marketing Co-op.
And what other things are coming up?
Well, I want to tell you something amazing. The Jewish Community Center asked us to help them with a fellowship, and it's called Tangled Roots. And it's a multi-ethnic, multi-media artists fellowship. There's 8 artists and a curator, and they work together and come up with an exhibition at the end. This is our second year, and we're looking for funding for 3 more years. We have a grant out right now. We'll hear next month.
Who are some of the artists and the directors that are heading that program?
Some of the artists are, I'm not going to remember everybody, so please forgive me, Mara Garcia, Anjali Tata Hudson, Jose Foss, Anthony Oropesa, Nedra Bond, Sherry Purpose Hall, spoken word artist. Nick Carswell's in it this time. I was in it last time. I'm sorry, I can't remember everybody. Richie Kay, and, I can't remember everybody. And so, let's see, the fellowship, that was one thing I wanted to... Oh, this is critically important. We have a survey out right now, and the reason why I'm mentioning it is it's, number one, it's regional, and number two, it digs down into information about artists that has not previously been tapped into. So the local arts... information that came out, the Local Arts Index and the Economic and Prosperity Study gave amazing pictures of what was going on in the 2008 status of artists in Kansas City that gave a great context. We want to look at what artists are doing with their work, how they're cobbling together their economic situation, are they raising families, where are they living.
How will this information be used, or how useful is the information, I should ask?
Well, we're very promiscuous in our sharing, and although our two main partners are the Kauffman Foundation for Entrepreneurship and UMKC Urban Planning Department, we're going to share all the information with Artists Inc. and Volunteer and Lawyers and Accountants for the Arts and the Artists Coalition, if they so see. But the idea is, who are the artists? What does their family life look like? And the most important thing is that the census and the IRS typifies artists only in their full-time capacity. If you're not earning your living as a full-time artist, you aren't counted. If you are cobbling together, you have a full-time job or a part-time job, or you're teaching and you do your art side on the side, if you're earning a small amount of your income that way, you're not counted. So when we talk about how many artists there are in the region, we're not counting everybody. If you're not a full-time equivalent, we don't, those numbers don't. So the numbers that are excellent for our area are astounding if we start to look more deeply at who artists are. And they're often putting together multi-tasks that support them, or they have a job that supports their work. And if you're a generative artist, it doesn't mean that you're earning a living from it.
Yeah, it's benefits, you know, the information benefits grant writers possibly, and corporations.
Yeah, okay. So a couple of things. Well, the quality of life aspects to what artists bring to an area. I don't think anybody needs to be talked into that.
Yeah,
unless you're a wooden head, and there are those. But the economic benefit of the creative arts industries, and I mean that really broadly. I mean fine artists, performing artists, graphic artists. I mean that in the broadest sense. the economic ratio of the creative arts in this area is blows lots of other communities out of the water. We
really?
Are, in terms of participation, contribution, the ratio economically speaking, and that's when we only count full-time equivalents. I mean, I feel as though if we look more deeply, it proves the economic power that the creative arts brings to the economy in a more holistic way.
And would you say, is that just recently or just maybe over the course of a number of years? Or
well, there's a critical mass. There's no doubt right now there is a wave happening. I mean, the America's Creative Crossroads, I think, is an awesome brand because the idea that we're in the center of the country and we are not to be denied, you know, it's, you know, that stuff like the West was not won on salad and we're, you know, cornfields and cows. I mean, I grew up in New York. I thought that. And, you know, it's, you know, when I got here, I was told, oh, you might stop at a stoplight. You might.
Wow.
But
wow.
I don't think that way at all. Yeah. I mean, having been here. And the arts for me, especially on the community level, not on the institutional level, although a lot of the institutions are really looking to... I look at it like a pyramid. And a lot of people look at the arts at the pinnacle of the pyramid are the biggest museums and the most expensive galleries, and so few people in as artists fit up there. So few people are represented there. And at the bottom of the pyramid is all the community arts in the broadest sense. Well, I look at the pyramid as being upside down. I think the most important part is the widest part. I'm not as interested, like I doesn't, I'm not as interested in whether or not my work ever ends up in a museum. That doesn't. That's not on my radar. My radar is how much impact can I make with the most people.
Wow, terrific.
Wow. Would you like to talk a little bit about your personal art? Are you working at?
Come on.
What are you working
on?
Well, the last thing I made
was spare time. What are you working at?
The last thing I did, last significant. Well, the last show I had was her art, and it was called Wonder Women. And it was women who don't just do their art, but work in their community. And I did a 6-foot paper mache 3D bra covered in Wonder Woman comics and called it the Wonder Bra. It's looking for a home, by the way. It's a bra in my studio. But, you know, my work, I officially closed my studio after that show to do this interurban thing, and I realized on vacation last week that was a mistake.
Well, obviously, then you've got regrets. So, do you want to maybe start working small, or maybe in a different media altogether?
I love working collaboratively, and so when something comes up and excites me, I know when I want to do something because my heart races and my blood pumps and that sort of thing, and like if I'm in a hardware store or an art supply store, forget about it. But what I want to do is everything. I don't know, you know, I have problems like that. So artistically speaking, I mean, I dream about doing pottery again, believe it or not. There's a potter in our studios, Casey Whittier.
You know, I was going to ask you, because you had mentioned all these others, but I didn't hear anything about a ceramicist or ceramics.
Let me talk about who's in the studio.
Oh, okay, would you
who's
please?
Who's in the house? Reggie Banks.
There you go.
Reggie Banks. Blackberry Castle Productions is a nonprofit.
Standing right behind
photo
you.
Photo video, and he is, like, looking over my shoulder. he's a photo video artist. We have Casey Whittier. She is installation in ceramics. We have Jessica Kincaid. She's beadwork.
I went to art school with her. I went to the Art Institute in Fiber. Started out in Fiber with her. She's got some terrific work.
Her work is amazing. And Sherry Blue is a painter. Laura Hines, Landscape Solutions. She's an landscape architect. Sherry Dean of Fetch Studios is graphic arts. Sherry Jacobs is Heartland Art Therapy. Susan Ryder is a painter and a dancer. And I want to give a big shout out to Lauren McGill, who is our administrative assistant and not just a sprightly wonder fairy, but she is a printmaker and a community artist as well.
Terrific. We're going to take another quick break, and we'll be right back with you. You're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Welcome back to Art Speak Radio. I'm Michelle Pond with Maria Vasquez-Boyd.
Hello.
And Nicole Emanuel from Interurban Art House. Nicole, do you have any closing thoughts for us?
Yeah, of course I went over time. Everybody's used to that. I want everybody to just check out the website. The website's where you can find the survey, which closes next week. You want to be heard, you want to be counted, please. If you want to see what kind of programming is available to you, we have a lot, and it's changing all the time, so go to innerurbanarthouse.org. And I want to invite everybody this third Friday, Michelle Pond. Oh, who would have known? Sharon Rodriguez, The Beauty of the Everyday, and Amado Espinosa and Karen Lissandra.
Perfect.
To please come out 5 to 8. We're at, may I say where the address? 8001 Concert Street. We're just one block west of 80th and Santa Fe in historic Overland Park. Thank you.
Do you want to give a website to just for us?
InterurbanArthouse.org. And if you're interested in my work, it's NicoleEmanuelStudios.com.
Thank you, Nicole. And it just so happens that our guests on this segment are Sharon Rodriguez, photographer, and Amado Espinosa and Karen Lansandra, musicians, who will be performing at Interurban Art House this Friday. Thanks for being with us. Sharon is a stress relief meditation trainer, photographer, and author. She started User Photography Skills to help her stress relief meditation clients and also started writing one-line mantras to go along with the photos. She's published 2 SRM books, Meditation for Everyday Use and Meditation for Everyday Use Volume 2. Her photographs and mantras are currently on display at Interurban Art House. She's published 2 books in another series, Women of a Certain Age and Rebels, Legends, and Icons. And Amada Espinosa, composer, instrument maker, and musician who plays over 40 instruments from Cochabamba, Bolivia, is a newcomer to the Kansas City community. He is a unique performing artist who respects his folk traditions of the Andes Mountains while creating compositions that are sincere to his musical wanderlust personality. His master craftsmanship of the instruments he constructs, whether it be from wood, metal, coconut, or recycled PVC, makes the process of music making more organic. And Karen Lissandra, who plays with Amado, is a percussionist, and also his wife, has joined us also. So thank you all for being here. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sharon, let's start with you and talk a little bit how your photography and stress meditation mesh.
Well, I was in a really tough place in my life. A couple of my friends had passed away, and I was sitting on my deck one day, and I was looking at the plethora of photographs that I had. And then I started writing one-line mantras to go with the photographs. And therefore, my first book was born, Meditation for Everyday Use. And in that book, I had several photographs and mantras per page, 40 pages of photographs and mantras. And I've been doing photography for a lot of years. That's how I came to have so many photographs, and lots of my friends kept saying, oh, you've got to do something with these. And I had a show several years ago, and it kind of fell apart. And recently I took photographs out of that first book and started showing them as meditative art. Gives people something to focus on while they're meditating, or they can use the one-line mantra. When I showed my daughter the first book, she goes, Mom, this is so confusing. Put one photograph, one mantra per page. Therefore, my second book was born, where I did exactly that. And I gave some further instructions for people to hold the book, ask a question about a problem in their life, and then open the book to a page and use that either the photograph or the one-line mantra in their meditation. And so that's how I have combined the two together. I would like to see more of my photographs in businesses because I come from an IT background and I know how chaotic it is in the corporate world. And I have had more people tell me that my photographs, they just want to stand there and look at them. And it makes them feel serene to look. And I have different subjects, nature, and places that I've been in the world.
Do you want to give a website?
Of course I want to give a website. Thank you for asking. You can find my artwork on Fine Art America and do a search for Sharon Rodriguez. You can also find my artwork on Energy, I-N-N-E-R-G-Y, for Inner Energy Photography on Facebook. And I use those two mediums right now. I also have a stress relief meditation website that I talk about the classes that I do, as well as have some of my photography on a tab on that website.
And Karen and Amato, you will be performing at Inner Urban Art House for Third Friday this week, and you do all kinds of wonderful music, but you also do some meditative music.
Yes, one of the most important parts about Amado's music is the connection to nature and a connection with yourself through natural instruments. That's why it's so important for him as an instrument maker as well to play. So he goes very deep inside. His playing is a meditative process for himself, and that it really transmits. It's really a very healing process for those who are in the room because it's a very energetic process. And so it's like the textures of the sounds, the textures of the wood or the bamboo that he's playing. It's just it becomes a very special moment.
And you're going to play something for us?
Yes, I play now a double flute. This is I made the instrument. Karen plays the
Tibetan bowl.
Beautiful. Can you tell us a little bit about that song?
I'll translate for Amado because he's just learning English. ¿Puedes decir algo de esa canción?
Son composiciones inspiradas en el altiplano boliviano.
So they're compositions that are inspired by the high plains of Bolivia.
y también en los lagos tenemos un lago, el lago Titicaca, que es uno de los más altos del mundo y tiene una energía muy positiva para la composición.
And also in Lake Titicaca, which is a very, very sacred lake, it has lots of very positive energy, which helps with his compositions.
Y lo que hemos tocado es prácticamente una pequeña muestra del disco de meditación que grabamos en Bolivia hace 2 años atrás.
So that song is a representative to a CD that we recorded on the, I'll add a little bit, on the solstice of December 21st, 2012, at Lake Titicaca.
Vamos a mostrar este tipo de música y otros más el día viernes.
So on Friday we'll do some of those songs from the album, as well as different songs from different flutes from other regions of the world.
I saw on your website there's a quote: "Music is a mirror of a culture, its geography and its landscapes." Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. I think one of in Amado's bio, it says he has very much a wanderlust personality. One of the things that he believes, and that you can tell as you watch him and listen to his playing, is that he travels. He travels, and the musical landscape, the musical imagination, really has no borders. So also one connects to different cultures, and so based on the song, you can sort of tell where Amado's at. ¿Quieres decir algo más de eso? Okay, no.
And also, you started very young. You started with music very young.
Yes.
8 years old.
In the school, I played the traditional flute. I think so. Nine years, tenía.
Mm-hmm. I was 9 years old.
Yeah, después comencé a incorporar más instrumentos tradicionales, después estudié en el conservatorio.
So after that I started incorporating more instruments, and then I studied in the conservatory.
Pero los instrumentos tradicionales, la mayoría los aprendí por sí mismo, autodidacta.
So the traditional instruments of Bolivia I learned autodidactically, by myself.
And then you expanded to world music.
That's expanded.
Sí, sí. Porque pienso que la música no tiene como barreras, no tiene fronteras, y es muy, muy bueno que la gente conozca estas culturas a través de la música.
So Amado believes that the music doesn't have frontiers, it has no borders, and for people to know these cultures through music is very important.
We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
90.1 FM presents Tonight's the Night, a tribute to the music of Neil Young. Wednesday, November 26th at 8 p.m., the night before Thanksgiving, Davies Uptown Ramblers Club. A full night dedicated to the music of the one and only Neil Young, featuring Alexis Barclay, The Hardship Letters, Cody Wyoming, Two-Headed Cow, Jason Vivoni, Chad Brothers, Mikal Shapiro, Barry Lee, Clark Wyatt, Lewis Myers, David Paul, Sarah Carpenter, Matt Darvin Davis, Paul Andrews, and many more. That's Wednesday, November 26th, the night before Thanksgiving at Davies Uptown. For more information, kkfi.org/events.
They'd heard this music, they lived it and breathed it. This is why the Americana acts of today, they all revere the Basement Tapes. It's home. It's their university.
I'm Rita Houston. Join me for true musical rarities that have finally seen the light of day. It's Bob Dylan, The Complete Basement Tapes.
Be sure to tune in for special Basement Tape sampler giveaways Thursday night at 7.
You're listening to ArtSpeak Radio, I'm Michelle Pond with Sharon Rodriguez, Amado Espinoza, and Karen Lissandra. And Amado and Karen are going to play another piece for us. Beautiful. Can you tell us a little about that song?
He tocado la mamaquena. Es una flauta de viento que es bastante grande.
So I played a flute called the mamaquena. It's also a traditional flute from Bolivia. It's about a meter long and made from bamboo. Mm-hmm. And made from bamboo.
Yeah. Y el tema que prácticamente hemos tocado es como una representación de las olas del lago Titicaca y cómo se va mezclando con los sonidos que la gente del lugar suele tocar.
So that song is a representation of the waves of Lake Titicaca and the sounds that the people of that region usually play or hear.
And Karen, can you tell us something about the instrument you were playing?
Oh, yes, bringing the ocean to Kansas City. It's an ocean drum, and it's not very scientific. It's just a frame drum that has lots of little metal beads inside.
And tell us how you got started playing music.
Me?
Yeah.
I started playing music when I was little. I played a little bit of the piano, but not very much. I learned how to read music, mostly through Amado and my relationship, because I'm more of a theater artist, and a lot of the aspects that I have through theater and especially training with it's sort of a physical and spiritual aspect of performance had a lot in common with the music that Amado is playing. So he's composed for a show of mine, and now it's my turn.
And what about making the instruments? How did you begin to make the instruments yourselves? And what we mentioned several materials that you use: wood, PVC. Can you tell us a little bit about, tell our listeners a little bit about that?
¿Puedes contarnos cómo has empezado a hacer música, a hacer, perdón, la creación de tus instrumentos?
Comencé hace aproximadamente 15 años atrás ya a construir diferentes instrumentos. Primero comencé con las percusiones africanas y después fui incorporando otros instrumentos.
So I started about 15 years ago making African drums, and then little by little I started constructing other instruments.
Lastimosamente en Bolivia no tenemos un lugar donde uno pueda aprender a construir instrumentos. Entonces todo eso lo aprendí por mi cuenta.
So unfortunately in Bolivia there's not a school or a formal place where you can learn to make instruments. So I learned everything by on my own.
Yeah. Y fue difícil en el inicio porque se desperdicia mucho material cuando uno está aprendiendo y después ya uno va mejorando con el tiempo.
So at the beginning it was very difficult. I wasted a lot of materials. But then little by little you start becoming more efficient.
Yeah. Bueno, hoy en día ya aprendí a reciclar los instrumentos. Hacerlos de materiales más comunes para que la gente común pueda utilizar materiales que tienen en su casa para construirse sus instrumentos.
So nowadays I make a lot of instruments from recycled materials so people can create instruments with materials from their own house.
Have you ever actually created an instrument on your own, that not just sort of modeled after something else, but come up with a new instrument?
¿Has inventado instrumentos?
Sí, tengo algunos inventos que hice en Bolivia. Por ejemplo, un didgeridoo es un instrumento australiano, pero lo he hecho con 16 salidas de... con 16 sonidos diferentes.
So, yes, I've made a few in Bolivia. One is a didgeridoo, which is an Australian instrument, but has 16 mouths, 16 different, how do you say, exits for the sound.
Entonces, la idea era que otra persona delante del instrumento esté tapando esas salidas, las bocas, y se generaban diferentes tonos al mismo tiempo que uno los iba tocando.
So the idea is that there's somebody covering the mouths of certain exits, certain mouths, so different tonalities and different keys of the sound of the didgeridoo comes out.
And so you'll be performing together on Friday at Inner Urban Art House. That's this Friday, November 21st, as part of the Third Friday Local Life. And you'll be playing mostly your meditative music or a little bit of a mix of things?
We'll be playing mostly meditative music this Friday. But you'll be able to see a lot of the different flutes and different instruments that Amado has made and that we've collected from different parts of the world. So there's going to be some percussion, but mostly they're all Amado's compositions. If you're interested in hearing a little bit more of the plethora of songs or of compositions of Amado, you can check out his website, which is www.amadoespinoza.com, AmadoEspinoza.com.
And Sharon, what will be your piece component on this Friday?
I'll be blessed to facilitate about a 15 to 20 minute meditation with Amado and Karen's work or music as a background, as well as showing my meditative art pieces for the evening, and I'll also have my books available. And you can find my work on fineartamerica.com or go to my website, www.stressreliefmeditation.net.
And as Nicole mentioned, Third Friday in Overland Park really involves the whole downtown area. And so if people are interested in looking at the full schedule of events, they can go to downtownop.org. And what else is on tap, Maria?
Well, we certainly want to thank our guests for coming in this evening.
Yes, thank you, Sharon Rodriguez, Karen Lissandra, and Amado Espinoza. And we have a few calendar items.
You left out Nicole Emanuel.
Oh, and a Nicole Emanuel. Oops. She was only here for an hour.
Well, you know, we have so much going on for the next few weeks. We're getting into the holiday season, so next Wednesday, November 26th, the day before Thanksgiving, I hope that you'll all tune in, because we have several guests that are going to join us here in the studio. We have James Mira and Adam Finkelstein, who are the founders and publishers, editors of The Hand Magazine, which is a quarterly publication for artists working in photography, digital, and print media. And their goal is to provide artists a way to publish the work and therefore reach a wider audience. Also, our wonderful friend, writer, author, Patrick Dobson will join us live in the studio. He's the author of Seldom Seen, which is a book about his journey into the Great Plains, where he actually took a walk from Kansas City to Helena, Montana. Patrick's also a freelance writer, former journalist. He is a working member of the Iron Workers Local Number 10. He also recently received his doctorate in U.S. Environment and American Literature. So, yeah, they'll be on board with us next Wednesday, November 26th.
And also this Friday at the Writer's Place at 7 p.m., see Malcolm Ellsworth and William Trowbridge, who's the Poet Laureate of Missouri, will be doing a reading, and that is at 3607 Pennsylvania. For more information, you can go to writersplace.org.
You know, we just live in a really wonderful, thriving arts community, and that's one of the reasons why we developed and created ArtSpeak Radio, to showcase, highlight, and make people aware, educate the community and listeners about this thriving, wonderful, terribly talented creative community of writers and performers and photographers and musicians. So it's a real honor. We never have to knock too far on doors to get someone to come in, because we've just got some wonderful people here in town who are creative. So there you go. And that's why ArtSpeak Radio exists. Again, we want to thank our guests tonight,
Nicole Emanuel, Sharon Rodriguez, Amado Espinoza, and Karen Lissandra. And, of course, we want to thank our listeners for tuning in to KKFI and ArtSpeak Radio.
Absolutely.
Stay tuned for American Roots, followed by Chamber Music at 9:30, then From Arc to Microtrip at 11:30. I'm Michelle Pond with...
I'm Maria Vasquez. Boy, thank you for listening. And, honey, I'm coming home.